Yesterday, we talked about these five hindrances, and we didn't say very much about greed and aversion. And we also didn't say that much about feelings of doubt that we can have. So we can just kind of know that they're there in the field as well, that we might at times feel a lot of greed, like I want to get a lot of stuff for me. And we can feel like I want to get more things for me so that then I can feel peace, I can feel content, I can feel happy. And, despite most advertisements in our kind of capitalist society, we probably realize there isn't any happiness in getting lots of stuff. And the same flow can happen in terms of aversion. If I get rid of this, then I'll be peaceful, I'll be relaxed, I'll be happy. And maybe there is just for a moment or two in and then it's like there's that. But if I get rid of that, then I'll be happy. And something that we can explore through these teachings is that it's actually not the getting of the things and the getting rid of things that actually brings about even the momentary peace and happiness we can get. It actually comes about through changing our relationship, almost to say, I don't need to get rid of that. I could be happy now. And maybe that's something we tasted a little bit today or in other times with the practice. I don't have to get rid of this, or I don't have to get something nicer. I could actually be happy because of the way that I relate to what's here. And the idea here is this can really help with our doubt as well. We can doubt ourselves, doubt these practices, but once we've kind of experienced it a few times, we think, well, maybe there is a different way of relating to this that's going to make me feel more free. So in life, there are times of pain and suffering, what we call dukkha. And, had a little fun time not translating that word or translating it and then untranslating it yesterday. And so I want to say a little bit more about the range of this word today. So the word itself is literally meaning things that are unpleasant to experience. Things which don't lead to us feeling happy. What we might call painful things. So, if you catch your finger in the door, it's dukkha. Yeah, ow, that hurts. Yeah, and that hurts you, and it also will hurt the Buddha. Getting your finger caught in the door is painful. But then we might think, like why have I caught my finger in the door? And we might think because I'm a stupid, clumsy person. Or we might think because this those really badly made doors that the so and so, it will make those bad doors. I hate those people. And this is more like suffering, yeah? There was pain and now there's pain and suffering. And this part the Buddha wouldn't be experiencing, wouldn't join us for. And so it's a little confusing because both of these are called dukkha in the teachings. But it's probably the kind of the psychological dukkha, the story-based that we really want to focus on reducing first. The psychological dukkha, the story-based dukkha, is depending on a demand. This shouldn't have happened to me. And from this shouldn't have happened to me becomes, why has this happened to me? Well, whose fault is it? And this could take any of its forms, but what we would generally call that is reactivity. And what we would call responsiveness would be, well, go and put a bandage on it or put it in that case. We have a response ability to look after the body. And other times, if it's not too serious, maybe we just think, ah, these are some sensations that I need to meet well, spaciousness, kindness. And so it seems that when we look at our life, we actually realize we from a kind of default setting that leads to dis-ease. We've developed, evolved, become kind of like programmed to avoid discomfort and seek only pleasant experiences. And even those who purposefully put themselves into painful situations, they kind of do it because it's pleasant for me to some degree. Oh, I like to be in stressful circumstances. And so we can end up in a struggle against a life which contains both painful moments and pleasant moments. We can't escape from having some experiences we wouldn't wish for. We want to continue living, we don't want to die. We want to have good relationships, not bad relationships. We want to live a comfortable, enjoyable life, uncomfortable, unenjoyable life. And so, because of that, we have to work on our relationships. And not just our relationships with other human beings, and not just our relationships with all other beings, but our relationship with any other sensation, vibration, or thought that can come into experience. So in this life, the comings and what seem to be painful, to be unpleasant phenomena is really unavoidable. But it's our resistance to those things which is really painful. And we often call this the next arrow, the following arrow that we fire into ourselves. So the first is trapping the finger, the second arrow is, oh, why me? So it's that, it feels like, there's a certain ow in our life when any beautiful thing ends. It's, oh, that's a shame. Or unpleasant thing, come into being, unpleasant sounds, or somebody dies. It's like, oh. So we might imagine it's in my life, then I would be happy. Yet what that tends to lead to a degree of struggle and resistance. And although probably it's been helpful through, millennia of evolution, avoid all unpleasant things, head towards pleasant things. As kind of supermarket humans with digital devices, it can turn against us. So is it so intelligent? Is it so wholesome to not meet everything well, or skillful, compassionate responses. So it would really lessen the reactivity, the distress in our life and in the world. So coming back to this word, dukkha, in the very early teachings of the Buddha, he would use a different phrase than dukkha and would call it quarrels and disputes. So like an argument with life. And of course, this leads to all kinds of distress in our experience. I mean, you can argue really well, but life's not going to say, oh, no, you're right, you're right. I should be doing it your way. And so they say the first noble truth in life, there is dukkha. So the first truth is to be comprehended, to be seen, to be understood. Ah, yeah, in life there are quarrels and disputes. We don't not only want to not feel good, sorry, it's too many double. We also don't accept that we won't feel good some of the time. So this is probably the point where it's important to say we're not looking just accept everything that's happening in the world and say again. So we don't want to just accept everything in the world that's maybe not okay, inequality, corruption, destruction, these kind of things. It's important to stand up for things that we feel are important in our life. Towards the end of the retreat, we'll talk about what can be easily transferred, what we work on internally, and what we can work on externally. Because internally, adding more acceptance is actually very, very effective. But it's not a blind acceptance, it's very wisely offered. And we're sensitive and we notice, oh, acceptance now, I'm going to change to something else. And because of this, I think we can see why the truths that are shared here, they're often, which isn't a word we use much anymore. And so they're actually coming from wisdom. And so it means kind of things which are worth attending to. Because they bring harmony, they bring well-being. In a sense, they make us dignified. Great. I'm just going to keep trying to find more and more tricky words to translate. And so if we even go back to this early sutta where the Buddha's talking about, oftentimes we're having quarrels with life, arguments with life. There's this exploration of like, so why? Why are we having, why are we constantly getting in an argument with life? And it comes down to this quality of tanha, which is a quality of demanding. And it leads us greediness. I should only be getting pleasant things, and I want more and more pleasant things. And that's why, if the food smells good, we suddenly think, I want some of that. And when somewhere smells bad, we're like, oh, I don't want, I that shouldn't be happening. I don't want to be anywhere around. And so we can understand, oh yeah, reactivity to pleasant and unpleasant things. That was probably really helpful for our ancestors because we only want nice things. Why would we want to hang around with not nice things? And so life is offering us, the whole thing. You're going to have the whole of life. And then we come along and say, yeah, I'll just have the nice half. Most of life is rejected. And the question is, what could we not reject quite so much? Particularly because rejection actually feels distressing. It's difficult, hard to bear. And I think I shared this last year. We could imagine, you have a baguette of bread. And we could say, I only like the left side of bread. I don't want the right side of any bread. So we break it in half and we throw away the right half. And we hold it up and we say, now I only have the left side of the bread. But then when we look at it, we realize now it's still got a right side and a left side. And so we obviously we're intelligent, so we break it in half again and throw away the right side and just keep the left side. So pleasant and unpleasant are also relative. Yeah. If you keep whatever condition you get into and you only want the pleasant in that room, I want only the pleasant in there, it's endless. So somewhere we're going to have to stop and say, okay, this is good enough. I'll have both. I'll have the unpleasant and the pleasant, and we'll just stop this game. And it's like one of those game shows. Do you want to see what's in the next box, or are you happy to take home the prize money you've won already? So, okay, yeah, you could have a less painful experience than you have right now. It's pretty good. So, can we make peace with this moment? Yeah, this one. With all that it has, the unpleasantness, the pleasantness, whatever it has, this one. It's the point of this teaching that the Buddha is sharing with us is that. Let's not fire another arrow into ourselves. And so, going back to that early sutta, the Buddha would refer to this desirable and taking other things as not dear and desirable. And the important thing is this kind of liking them as if that's what they really are. So taking things as dear and desirable, as in, I think this is really dear and desirable. Should we say it another way? So this is where we're going to take a step a little bit further into a subtle element of our experience. So in a way, what we've tried is that let's see if we can not be so reactive when something unpleasant comes along. Let's not invest so much energy in trying to get rid of this or trying to contain it or trying to fix it and see if there's a peaceful way of relating. And we can transfer this across to pleasant things. If something nice comes along, I don't need to grab it for me. I don't need to hold on to it. I don't need to kind of keep it somewhere secret so no one else can find it. I can smile with it, appreciate it, give space. Or if you really want to make a more lasting happiness, you could give it to someone else. You know, that's really the best way to maximize happiness. So if you're a really selfish person, you should be giving things away because then you get the maximum amount of happiness. And so now we could take that even further because there's still perhaps the blind belief that this really is pleasant or this really is unpleasant. And this brings us to another part of the teaching, which I think also is one of those untranslated. It's Vedana. Sometimes it's translated as feeling tone. But as far as I can tell, that doesn't actually mean anything. It might mean something to you. It doesn't mean anything to me. So what I call it is the niceness opinion. Yeah. Yeah. So anytime there's a sound or there's a sight or there's a smell, what we'd call like a sense contact with the world, it comes along with this very quick opinion. Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's not nice. Oh, that's nice. Oh, I'm not sure about that one. That's nice. So there are basically three types of Vedana. Dukkha is one of them. Painful, unpleasant things. Sukha is another one, pleasant things, or things that could bring happiness. Yeah. And then there's everything else. What the Buddha said was adukha, asukha. Not painful, not going to bring a lot of happiness, all the rest. And I think this is the biggest bucket of our life. There's quite a big kind of cup full of unpleasant things. And all of those, I really don't want to throw them away quite happily. And then there's this very, very small schnapps cup that's got the happy things in it. And then there's this kind of big, big space that's probably like the size of a big kind of supermarket. And it's just full of everything else. And maybe when we come on a meditation retreat, we actually start to take things out of that big space and actually say, you know what, walking, it's actually quite nice. You know, breathing, that's actually good. I like breathing, especially in breathing. You know, and also the sky. You know, the sky is fantastic. Just look up and just. So what happens with the niceness opinion is that those that aren't nice and those that aren't not nice just get They don't get noticed, they don't get any attention. So we could take this Vedana teaching as an invitation to notice more. Oh, notice what you're not noticing. Open the eyes, open the ears, take in more. You can kind of be sitting here and then, oh yeah, what about some area of my body that's not really calling my attention? Why don't I pay my, just rest my attention there? And this has a really powerful effect because mindfulness is actually happiness in it, and it starts to make it feel quite pleasant. And do you also use the phrase like this in Czech to say you give attention? Like it has generosity. Give your attention. Do you say it like that? So a really lovely thing that we can receive their attention. They give their attention to us. Oh, when someone listens, it's such an honor, isn't it, to be listened to? Especially when they really listen to us and they're not also looking at their phone. So on retreat, we actually get to listen to our breath, to our body sensations, to the sounds that are here. And so when we bring this quality with the understanding, dinner has filtered out a lot of life. Maybe I want to listen in to all of that. And so here we're getting to kind of the subtler point of our practice. What really matters is how we listen, how we. So we can talk about having default settings. So, that's nice. I'm going to have it. That's not nice. I'm going to get rid of it, squash it, kill it. It's like, nah, it's not really nice, not really not nice. I'll ignore it. So that's the quite an automatic kind of default setting that we come into life with. But if you check the settings, you know how to get to the settings, right? And then you scroll down to the bottom of the settings. There's advanced settings just at the bottom. And then you want to pick spacious and kind. And just toggle that on. And then let's go back and let's have Vedanas, right? We can't escape from having Vedanas still. We think, oh, that's nice. Oh, that's not nice. That's neither nor. Yeah, and then nice, but spacious and enjoy, but not hold on to. Yeah, and in that way, it's, less dukkha, less demanding. Bring it towards that kind of middle Vedana. It can bring interest to what is otherwise thought boring. Yeah, we spoke about yesterday, we can read into things which just feel really kind of calm, not too problematic. Just bring more and more interest into them and they come alive, they expand, they grow. Unfortunately, when our mind wanders away, that toggle in the advanced settings, it gets turned back on again or off again, whatever way around we want to see it. And we get reset back to the default. It takes a long time before the fix is going to come out and we get the advanced setting. But the great thing is, we're keeping to develop a lot more patience and kindness. Each time we go, we just reset it. It's like, oh, let's meet this one with spaciousness and kindness. So we've got to stay positive as we practice. It's very easy to fire another arrow into myself for once again returning to having default setting. Sometimes people speak about the dukkha of being in the second arrow. But if we use that example of like shutting my finger, the second arrow is, you know, why me? And yeah, we can drop that one, but probably we'll find probably a third or fourth arrow that we also fired. And here I am like an idiot beating myself up for something that's just happening. So the beautiful thing is, it doesn't matter how many arrows we've already fired, we only need to not fire the next one. And luckily, when you're in an argument with yourself, in a fight with yourself, you stopping actually does stop the fight completely. And so not firing the next arrow really means going against the... It really means opening up. Yeah, it really means brightening our existence. Yeah, we brighten, we open, you know, like the title of the retreat. Yeah. And of course, we will roll over, default settings will come back, and it's another opportunity to brighten and open. But as we become more and more familiar how things unfold, we will find more peace, more well-being. And hopefully that will lessen our doubt in ourselves or in these teachings to really significantly change our lives. Okay, so we'll bring Vedana more into our practice tomorrow. That's what I wanted to share for this session. Okay, so I hope that's useful already, and we'll bring it into a practice tomorrow, and then we'll have time for some questions and reflections at that time. Okay, let's just have a quiet minute together to close the session. So thank you for your kind listening and attention. It is always a gift to receive attention. And your listening is very deep and precious. Thank you, and I wish you well with your continued practice.